Today we're talking art and faith with Jamie Winship. He is an accomplished speaker, author, known for his work in identity, transformation, and peace building. So that's what the internet would tell you, which is true. Man, but he is also like a radical man of faith, like just clearly hears from the Lord regularly, clearly acts upon it. I mean, he has amazing stories. In this episode, I had to fight the urge to just have him tell stories I've heard before because they're so good. So I would encourage you guys to check out a great one with like getting to know him and lots of great stories is Heaven Meets Earth. It's a podcast. It's on YouTube and everywhere else as well. So he, at a young age, snuck into a rated R movie. And it was a story about a police officer. And God just encountered him during that film. And he felt like called to be a police officer, called to this like militant peacemaking. And so his professional journey like starts with like he becomes a very distinguished police officer in law enforcement in D.C. And then he's like repeatedly reproached by the CIA for like his unique approach to conflict resolution because he keeps accomplishing things that shouldn't work. From day one, he's like told his commanding officer that he prays and asks the Lord for direction. And he just does it. And kind of this like, he'll do it even if he'll get fired. I feel like that's one really unique thing about him through all his stories is kind of like his obedience to the Lord. It just led him to crazy places. So the CIA like comes to him and wants to understand what's happening here. How did this like whole drug ring go down? How did it just disappear? And the short version is there's this guy that assaults an officer. He arrests him. He's driving away and he feels like the Lord tells him to let him go. And he's like, no, I can't let him go. I'm going to get fired. I can't do that. And anyway, long story short, he ends up letting him go. He de-arrested him. There was like, it was just legal enough. And then like jumping forward in time, this guy ends up like feeling so much gratitude and ends up like becoming an informant and like helping them take down all these drug busts and different things. And just amazing to see what the Lord did in that and even their relationship there. It's just like that's like one of like 1,000 stories he has. Eventually like they bring him into like higher conflict areas, war zones and places in the Middle East. He's seen some like truly hard stuff, but also has had the Lord with him and seen so much like healing and progress. I could go on and on. I just let us dive into it, but I really recommend that you Google his name, check out some of his stories. He really focuses on identity and identity in Christ and like what God has called us to. And then also kind of like that to counteract fear and just amazing what the Lord can do in our lives when we do that. So he has a book called Living Fearless. That's great as well. So anyway, I'm going to leave it here, but enjoy this conversation with Jamie Winship. When did God first become real to you?
It's pretty interesting because for me, experiencing God as real was always with another person, you know, a person that was like a model that I could look to, and then some form of art for certainly for both of those. But so I was raised pretty strict. My mom, independent Baptist, my dad, not really engaged in anything religious. And so my mom kind of ran the house in terms of that stuff and very strict, go to church, read the Bible, read the King James, you know, no movies, no bad music, that kind of thing. And so, at 14, I wanted to go to a movie theater and see a movie, to see what was forbidden about that. And the thing is, you know, as you form these neural pathways about life and the rules, and they're deep. They're very deep. And they're even at my age at 65, I still wrestle with some of that heavy handed sort of condemning legalism kind of stuff, which is absolute murder to creativity in a human, not just in the arts, but in any kind of vocation. You're just going to, you know, do whatever everyone else does. Anyway, so stuck into this movie. I didn't know what it was. And it was the movie Serpico with Al Pacino. So like 1973, something like that. I was 14. And yeah, everything about it, the music, the musical score for the movie, the cinematography, the gritty story, there was a true story about police officer Frank Serpico. All of that just like cut through everything I understood about anything. It just sliced right through it. It kind of completely disarmed me and hit me right deep in the soul, in the spirit, in my inner heart. And it was just so emotional to me that I just wept. And I was raised, the way I was raised is like, you don't cry, we're martyrs, we're were determined. And so I just broke down crying. But it was this weird kind of joyful, beautiful thing. I couldn't articulate it, but it wasn't guilt. It wasn't shame. It wasn't that stuff. It was something really beautiful. And I knew it. I could tell. And I knew it was, I wouldn't attribute it to God, because God to me didn't fit in those parameters. It was like something beyond that. And so, and it really struck me. And I would kept looking at the police officer being portrayed by Al Pacino. And I kept saying, not that I wanted to do police work. My word was be. That's what I want to be. That's what I want to be. It was a very much an ontological sense of being. Hmm. And so I committed myself to becoming that, what I was watching on the screen. And so the only way I understood metaphor at that point was literally, like, okay, so that must mean to be that, you have to be in that vocation. Because a lot of times, you know, you take a metaphor literally and it can be helpful, but it can also be damaging. Anyway, so I went forward in the movie theater, because that was the culture of the Independent Baptist. If you believe something's happening, you should go forward. So I walked forward in the movie theater at the end of the movie, and got up on the little stage, and I just said to whatever, if this was God, never known God in this beautiful, artistic, overwhelming acting, music, all of it together, just a never known God to be artistic. He's more just a judge. In a very cold black and white courtroom. And so I just said, I want to be this, into whoever is that moving me like this, I want to be this person. And so 14, you know, till I went in the police academy at age 23, all the way through high school, through university, I never wavered from becoming that. And of course, when I had my first like personal experience with Jesus, clearly was when I was 17 and I was in the hospital and a nurse was explaining to me who Jesus truly was. And she was doing it through her vocation. Again, totally caught me off guard. I never heard the gospel like that. She was sharing from like her own identity, not some canned formulaic presentation, which I knew by heart. And I knew her God is the one that was in that theater. Like that's her. Hmm. She's the fruit of that kind of whoever that God there. Cause she's different than any other healthcare professional in this hospital that I've interacted with. She's a nurse, but that's not her identity. She's bringing something into the vocation. And then I realized that's what the movie was. It wasn't the police officer. It was the identity being demonstrated out in the vocation of police work, which was really dramatic to me. I never thought of bringing your identity into your vocation. You get your identity from your vocation or from what you have or what people think about you. Even Christianity was all about what people think about you, and you get your identity from what people think and do they approve and all of that. And so when I left the hospital, from age 14 to 17, those experiences melded or blended together. And I was like, oh my gosh, she is in real life what I watched in that movie. And so my prayer, the way I prayed about it was, God, can you make me a police officer like she's a nurse? Like that's the only way I knew how to say it. Whatever it is that she's bringing to the nursing vocation, could you teach me how to bring that to the police vocation? Which is a very different motivation than I'm going to go out there, you know, and kick butt and take names and, you know, fix crime and all that. It's like, no, she was giving the gift of her identity to me in her vocation as nurse. How would I as a police officer give the gift of my identity to the people that I'm going to interact with because of that vocation? And so by the time I went to freshman in college, I had a pretty good sense of this is exactly what Jesus is doing. It's what he's, and it's what he's calling tax collectors and all of them too, is he's walking them into the truth of who they are. And then he's saying, that is your gift to the world in whatever vocation you happen to be in. And he's demonstrating that I'm the beloved son in the vocation of Messiah. And it was all just like, oh gosh, this is the good news. This is the kingdom of God. And it allows for such creativity and freedom and beauty to think of, okay, this vocation that I'm in, there's a million ways to do this that hasn't even been thought of yet, which made me creative and artistic as a police officer, which is why I made Officer of the Year and got I never went through a promotional exam. I just got promoted and then recruited by the State Department, all because of really my creativity in the vocation, which was a product of my identity.
It's good. So good. I've heard you talk some about sort of feeling this call almost as like a militant peacemaker in a way. And I feel like that is that, I guess, when you're also talking about the kind of bringing creativity into the police work, could you explain that a little bit more, what that looks like, bringing that creativity into police work?
Right. So, you know, again, this is all a journey that humans are on. And the more fully human you are, the more you grasp. Because most of what we do is inhumane. Most of it is to dehumanize. So to be a police officer wasn't human. It was like, that was the name of what you are. You're a police officer. They're a bad guy. Everyone's dehumanized. So there's no real connection between the groups. You don't have, you know, it's like Cain and Abel. Like, he's not my brother. He's not my brother. And since he's not my brother, I now can do whatever I want to. So it dehumanizes and you lose all sense of real creativity, except to create, to separate and destroy. That's all you're creating is programs, weapons that separate and destroy your enemy. So through the police department, I would be like, okay, we've been to this house 10 times over a year, breaking up a domestic dispute. We're going to keep going here until someone's dead or someone's in jail. But even if they're in jail, they're going to come back and we're going to be here again. So the way that we're trained to do this doesn't work. Like, it's not working. And so, because we're not resolving anything, we're just law enforcing. We're not serving and protecting. We're law enforcing. So right there was like a huge distinction in my mind. Our car says we serve and protect, but we don't. We just enforce laws. Jesus is a server and protector. Pharisees are law enforcers. Which one is bringing peace and which one is just creating more conflict? So just that thought allowed creativity, like, well, how would we shift away from law enforcement, which is how you're trained, to serving and protecting, which is not how you're trained? How do you do that? Then I started like, okay, so that's not what we're trained to do. So I've got to like come up with ways to do it outside of what I was trained to do. And that's creativity. And then the more I read the scriptures, the more I realize, well, the highest level of a human is to be a co-creator with God. Like, that's our highest level. Is we're angels can't create, demons can't create. We can create. That's our power. That's our, Satan can't create. Only we can with God. And so what are we doing with that? We should never be stuck in formulas and patterns and boredom. And it's because we abdicate that beautiful freedom to create and just go into like, what works? What's going to just get me to where I want to go? And so I was creating like that, trying to think of how do you investigate a case? And if I had the mind of Christ, what does that look like versus just a really good cop? And writing down ideas and praying, and prayer becomes this search for external creativity. That's what it is, an internal inspiration. And in any vocation, you know, we use the word entrepreneur all the time, but like, you mean co-creator with God, create. So then when I was doing that, and then the State Department gets interested in what I'm doing because it's different. And then, you know, they recruit me. And then when I get overseas, I'm with a guy who's watching me, who happens to be one of the five people that super influenced my life. And he's an expert in what he does overseas. And he's just looking at me and he says, you don't know who you are. Like, you don't know who you are. And I'm really good at what I do. I made it. And I went to graduate school and all this stuff, and I didn't apply for a job. I got recruited into jobs. And he said, you don't know who you are. And I said, what do you mean? And he said, you don't know distinctly who you are. And I said, how do you know? And he said, because you're just imitating other people. Like, you're a cover band. You're a good cover band, but you're a cover band. And he said, we don't need that, because we already have, what we need is what we lack by not having you here, but we don't know who you are. We don't know what you bring. And we can't tell you. You have to tell us who you are and what your gift is to what we do. And I had no idea what he was talking about until. And then so they hooked me up with this guy who walked me through this process. And in that process, it was like, okay, who am I? If Jesus was going to introduce me to somebody, how would he introduce me? He would say this. He wouldn't say, this is a Christian guy. He would never call anybody that. He wouldn't say, this is a child of God. That's everybody. Like, who distinctly is this person, and how would Jesus introduce this person to another person? And I asked him, who do you say that I am? Like, who would you say that I am? And just like this image in my mind came first of warrior, like okay, that resonates. But that, like, Gideon was a warrior, but he didn't think he was. He thought he was a coward. Mm. Like, that's, he, I lived in the identity of a coward, even though his true identity is man of valor. And so when the Lord speaks, or, you know, when you have that impression, it's usually opposite to what you really believe about yourself deep down. So when he says you're a warrior, it's like, wow. I mean, it almost made me cry, because, like, deep down, I don't think that's what I'm trying to prove, that's what I am. But, mm-hmm. and so, but if you believed it, you wouldn't have to prove it. So yeah. And you just be settled in it. And so then the next, and I said, like, what does that mean? That's a broad term. He said, you're a militant peacemaker. As soon as I sense that word, then you can, like, go back in your life and go, what were you doing in third grade? What were you doing in fifth grade? What? And you start to see, oh my gosh, that was all of my pain, was searching how to bring peace to situations in a world I just didn't feel like it could ever. And so it was always there. I just didn't know it. Like Joshua, Jacob, when he has the dream of the angels and the ladder, and he wakes up and he said, surely God is in this place. And I didn't even know it. That's most humans right there. Even Christians. No, God's in this place right now, and you don't know it. And the way we know you don't know it is because you are trying like crazy to make this thing happen. And that's not the way to think about it. It's much more about receiving and giving the gift of your identity. So once I understood that, it actually really lined up with how the State Department tested me psychologically, how the police department did it. I was like, that's exactly what they were saying to me. You have this tendency, you don't like conflict, but you gravitate towards it. It's weird. Why, if you hate conflict, do you gravitate towards it? Because you hate it. And so you gravitate towards it to bring peace. So in my sort of inauthentic self, I hate violence, so I avoid it. It's my greatest gift to the world is to go into violent places and bring peace. But in my self-protection and self-promotion, I avoid the very thing that gives me joy. But I don't know, because I'm afraid of it. And you get in this false kind of life of self-protection and self-promotion. You're dissatisfied, but you can't really tell why until you realize, who does God say you are? And what are you sad about in your life based on that beautiful identity? What does that identity make you want to go do and be? It makes you want to go to places that you probably are most fearful of because of how deeply it affects you. So once I realize that, then you get really skilled and, okay, I'm going to those places. And when we get to those places, we're going to figure out what in this identity brings peace in that situation. So then you know what to train in, honestly, and you're really good at it, actually, because now you're working in line with
you. Yeah, good. Yeah, I feel like, even within that, the two things that you've talked about and previously too that jumped out at me is like, so clearly identity is a big part of it. And I also feel like what's very, like, when I hear you talking, even on other podcasts, it's like hearing from the Lord and not just mimicking Christian behavior, you know, but actually like make space to hear from the Lord. I'm thinking too, I feel like even like in an artist standpoint, like I think for me, it was almost like I was trying to be creative. And then I was like, had my faith and my community group and my church and something I care deeply about, but I just couldn't quite, it almost felt like I need to like close that off to go try to quote, be creative, you know, which right. That's been changing for sure in me. But I'd be curious to hear you say for like the artists and creatives out there who are like, hey, how do I find this identity? And then B, I think, is like, teach us how to hear from the Lord from your perspective.
I do this every day with people. We have to do it ourselves. I do it with, we have a creative team that met this morning. So what you have to think about first is the gift that you bring to a community, is your identity. That is your greatest gift. It's the only distinctive you have, is your identity. And so if you don't know what that is, then you're going to imitate. I mean, that's what you just have. Like, who do I really admire? I'm going to try and be like them. That's okay. That's a good way to start. But like I said, you don't want to be a cover band the rest of your life. You can start that way, but you don't want to stay that way. So so identity and hearing from the Lord. So identity, when I'm talking identity with people, I ask them questions like because first of all, that identity has been there your whole life. It's not going to suddenly appear. It's not like, you know, you meet God and all of a sudden he gives you an identity. What he does is awakens what he's already put in you for any human. And so down inside, the person actually has a sense of it. They just never thought about it or whatever. And the negative identities are so believable and powerful. The true identity is hard to believe because it takes faith to believe that about yourself. It takes faith. Doesn't take any faith to believe the lies about you. None. You're not smart. I know it. You're going to fail. Yeah, you're a disappointment. It doesn't take any faith to believe any of that stuff. And because we believe the false and it's painful to us, then you better find some coping mechanisms for it. Like, you just better find them. And so those coping mechanisms can be, like, for me, I had to do a year in rehab because of my coping mechanisms of I'm a disappointment. It didn't matter what achievement level I made. It doesn't take away the false identity. Time can't take away a false identity. Only truth can. Time doesn't heal any wound. Only truth heals wounds. Like, that's what heals us. And if we don't have a place to discover that truth, then we get stuck in it and we have to develop coping mechanisms to survive. You just have to. Whether your coping mechanism is I'm going to become super ultra religious and memorize the Bible, or I'm going to go drink. They're both deadly because they take you away from the truth of who you are. And so that's why we get in these community groups and everything to, like, stay healthy, but they're actually not making you healthy. And then you feel like, I got to leave that to go over here and kind of tap into my creativity. When what a lie does is it separates and fragments our life. So we have this part, and then we have this part, and then we have this part. And the goal of the lie is to just fragment and fragment and fragment and fragment till the whole thing falls apart. Whether it's in a human or in a country, it just keeps fragmenting into smaller and smaller divisive parts, and it just falls apart like that. What God's always doing is reconcile and reconnect. Always, he's reconciling and bringing all things together. So whatever we're doing, in what way is it reconciling and bringing things together like that? What is the message that I'm, and it can be a million different ways, but is it reconciling it? So discovering your true identity can only be done by receiving it in community and working it out in community. It's the only way. So forget Christianity. Like, if you go back to any culture, all of them had naming ceremonies. The Bible's filled with the importance of naming and names and having good names and bad names and right names and wrong names. And every culture had naming ceremonies. And I think only probably native populations have it. Bar mitzvahs are naming ceremonies. So my wife is Jewish, so our sons all went through naming ceremonies in the Jewish community, which means you're now 14. You now have to realize you have a distinct role in this community, and the community is going to tell you what that role is. It's not radical individualism. It's not like go off and come up with an identity and tell us what it is, because that creates separation and division. Radical individualism always creates conflict, but receiving your identity in community is like, oh, the community recognizes this is my contribution to the community. And if I'm not there, they don't have it. And if I'm not there, I'm not giving. So it's never separate and just for me. But then slowly we've just gotten rid of all that. And so now we're just these individuals trying to think of the coolest name we can think of, but it doesn't have any part to play in community. It's all how, look at me, look how distinctive I am. You are distinct, but a hand is distinct when it's connected to an arm. Then it's really beautiful. But by itself over there on the floor, not that helpful. And that's what we've done. We've so fragmented everything. It's like, I'm going to be my own individual. And you're denying that beautiful identity to the community. So hearing from God is very simple. God is always communicating to human beings. Every human, God is in constant communication with that human. You just have to train to pay attention to it, because we're trained to pay attention to other stuff. We're trained to. And so my example I always give is when I was a rookie cop, and my training officer is like, you got to learn to hear your number on the radio when they call you, because it's a big department and there's lots of talk on the radio. And if you don't hear your number, you don't know what the heck is going on. And I'm like, okay, I'm ready to listen. He said, they've already called you 3 times. Well, if you put me on a lie detector test and said, did they call you? And I said, no, I would be telling the truth. And I'm completely wrong. That's what people don't understand. You can be saying what you think is absolutely true, and you're completely wrong. God's never talked to me in my life. I know you believe that's true, but it's never true. And so why can't I hear my number? Because I have to train my hearing to get rid of all of this and focus on that. And I had to train to do it, so that now if I'm sound asleep and my wife wants to wake me up, she just leans over and goes 5'10". My whole body comes alive. Because I trained to hear that identity. And so this is what discipleship is. Discipleship isn't memorizing a bunch of verses. Discipleship is disciplining for you to learn to walk in the truth of who you are and give that to the world. That's real discipleship. And it involves every part of your life. And so if we just have Bible study over here and then this over here, like you're fragmenting the whole. And so this becomes super frustrating over here. And then you get over here and you don't have this piece over here. And that's frustrating. But connect them. And God is speaking across all of them. Very simply, when I talk to people, I'm like, I just did it right before I came on here. I was with a guy, super discouraged. He's about my age. And I'm like, what? Tell me a time in your life you had joy. Anytime. And think. And they have to think. When did I have joy? Okay, first through fifth grade. Let's tell me what joy looks like. Well, I was happy to get out of bed in the morning. Good. Why? Because I wanted to create things. Yeah. What? What things? Create what things? Here comes that true identity. Right at a full attention, right in this. At the beginning, it's like, I don't know what I'm doing in life. And, you know, I'm divorced. And it's like false. All the false. All the false. All the false. Yeah, I get it. Okay. But before that, what did you want to create? And I just wanted to be with people and listen to what they had to say about their lives, their problems. First through sixth grade, he's already in his identity. You can't, but when did you lose it? Seventh grade. What happened in seventh grade? I realized I'm ugly. Really? How? Okay. So you didn't like walk down the street and go, you know what? I'm ugly. Somebody told you you were ugly. You had to be told you were ugly. Who told you that? And he was pretty detailed. Some teacher, a teacher. Made fun of him the way he looked at him last. This guy's, he's probably 60. Doesn't matter if he's 100, that day named him. And he took that day and said, yep, that's mine. And he can't break it. You can't break it by just, no, I'm not. No, I'm not. Everything after that, he's so self-conscious. And as soon as he said what happened in seventh grade, I'm so sorry. What are you going to do now in seventh grade with the fact that you know you're ugly and there is nothing you can do about it? What are you going to do? Either you're going to give up or you're going to prove that you're not ugly, that you're valuable, that you're worthy. Either way, you're going to go away from the truth of who you are. And so I said, So on the day, just sitting with them in a restaurant, just now, on the day, seventh grade, where were you standing when you realized that? Right in front of the school, waiting for my parents to pick me up. Okay. All right. And tell me, who said that about you? He names the person. How does it make you feel now? It's 100 years ago. I hate it. It makes me disgusted with myself. There's the killer for him right there. He's already disgusted with himself. So whatever he goes to do in life, the disgusted one is going to do it. And he already doesn't like the way he looks and all that. And he looks fine. I mean, come on. But that doesn't matter what I say. And so I said, okay, on that day, you remember that if it hurts. I believe that God is always present everywhere in the world all the time. He was present there with you. In your imagination, in your mind, if he was there, where was he? And he just sitting there thinking, he goes, I think he was next to me. Okay, which side, right or left? And it's beautiful how the mind works. So gorgeous. Because it can see the unseen real. It can also see the unseen false, which is dangerous. But you can see the unseen true. That's a decision we have to make. He's on my left. Okay, well, in Hebrew culture, when God's on our left, it means he wants us to receive from him. Okay, so what's he want you to receive? He's on the right, he wants you to give out and bless. What did he say when they said you were ugly? What did he say? You heard them. They said that. We're not denying that. This is what you don't know. What did he say? And the guy gets all emotional and he said, I'm kind, right? He didn't say you were handsome. He said you were kind. You know why? Because that's more important than how you look. You're kind. Mm-hmm. What else did he say about you? Kind, courageous. What's the other thing? And beautiful, kind, courageous, and beautiful. Let's say, okay, kind, courageous, beautiful. Here's a verse for you to memorize. Jesus said, if my words abide in you, if you abide in me and my words abide in you, ask whatever you want. Okay, now when you hear that, if you abide in me and my words abide in you, what words do you think he means that abide in you? And he's like, the Bible. I'm like, that's not what he said. It's not the word graphe. It's the word rhema. My rhema abides in you. What is rhema? The spoken word. To abide in Christ, you need every day to abide in him and let what he said about you abide in you. Here's what he says about you: kind, courageous, and beautiful. If you learn to let those words abide in you, and that's who you become, kind, courageous, and beautiful. Not beautiful here, beautiful to everyone that's around you. Like, what a beautiful person. That's far deeper than you're ugly. Right. And I said, if you abide in that every day, and it's going to be a battle because all the brrr, but if you can learn to abide in those, let Jesus abide in you, abide in what he says about you, then Jesus says, ask me things. And To the kind and courageous, beautiful you, let's go. But to the ugly you, can't go anywhere. Can't go. And if you will let those words abide in you, you will bear fruit, and it will be fruit that remains. It's not Bible verses. It's not the Ten Commandments. Is what does Jesus say about you? Do you believe what he says about you uniquely? And righteousness is to believe what God's, look in the mirror and learn to believe what God says about you when he talks about you. And it's hard because he says very high level things about us. And it's so easy to walk away going there. That's hearing from God. So gorgeous. And once you start to practice that, you realize he's speaking in every good idea. He's speaking in nature. He's speaking in the Bible. He's speaking all the time.
So good. Oh man, it's so good. So I hear you saying a part of like even receiving the identity is in community. That'll be a part of it. Another part is learning to listen and strip away, I think almost identify and strip away the false identity.
Oh. Yes.
And in that process, it sounds like often people do hear from the Lord in that process of stripping away a false identity, or more, say their ears are in tune to what he's saying.
That's right. Because you're clearing away all the false that you believe. It's hard for the Lord to speak on top of all the false. So it's like an emptying out. And another question I ask people is like, tell me the things you believe about yourself that you hate. Tell me the names that you believe about yourself that hurt you. People can tell you right away what they are, but they just learn to cope with them. They don't know how to get rid of them. They just cope with them. And so they're always right there below the surface. And if you touch them, you know, the personal reaction.
So good.
Yeah. So let's get rid of those. Good. And in that empty space, now ask the Lord, what do you say? And learn.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Like that. It's pretty straightforward, very human process.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter whether the person's Muslim or Hindu. It doesn't matter. These are very human things. And because God didn't create religious names. He works with human beings. That's who he works with.
So. Good. Is there any other steps in the identifying your identity? I know you mentioned also like where did you find joy at a young age? But.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So really the quickest way I do it for myself is what are you afraid of? What are you afraid of? Mm-hmm. Always. I ask my wife that question every day. Tell me what you're afraid of today. If you want to be close with a person, tell them what you're really afraid of. That builds intimacy like nothing else does because none of us will say it. We don't know how to truth tell about this kind of stuff. And most people are not afraid of, you know, they're afraid of like failure. I'm afraid of rejection. I'm afraid of not belonging. I'm afraid those very beautiful things they've been afraid of their whole life. What are you afraid of? Because perfect love takes away fear. So what are you afraid of? Okay, all fear is learned. So what are you afraid of? Where did you learn? Who taught you to be afraid of that? The only built-in fears in a human is the fear of falling and the fear of loud noises. All other fear is learned. Everything you're afraid of in a day, you were taught to be afraid of. Where did you learn to be afraid? Who taught you to be afraid of rejection? Who taught you to be afraid of money? You would have never been afraid of money if you weren't taught to worry about it every day. Who taught you to worry about it? Where did you learn that? And then so that they can begin to truth tell. Oh, it was the experience when, you know, my dad lost his job or, you know, I grew up in poverty or whatever it is. That's where you learn to be afraid of it because there's nothing to be afraid of there. What you want to be afraid of is believing about yourself things that are not true and believing about the world things that are not true. That's what you should be afraid of. Not do I have enough, like all of that. So what are you afraid of? Where did you learn it? Tell me the day you learned it or as close as you can. Okay, in that day, what about, tell me the incident, they'll explain it. And I'll say, okay, now, same thing. On that day, you didn't know it. You just responded like you reacted like any normal person. But there was another interpretation of what that means. You got one and it's hurting you. What if God was there or perfect love or whatever the person can use for the word that's opposite of the false, Jesus, whatever. What did they want you to know that day? And it's incredible what pops in people's hearts and minds. It's like, you're okay.
Yeah.
You were enough. That was your dad's woundedness that hurt. And you're like,
yeah.
And then the result is mercy on the other person. That's how you know it's God. It's like, they acted out of their own woundedness. I mean, when we prayed like this with guys that we arrested, man, you should see what happens when you're in an interview room doing that with human beings, how quickly they'll tell the truth. And you're not trying to beat a confession out of them or drag them through. It's like, you're broken, man. You're broken. Let's talk about the day you got broken. How old were you when this was done to you? And that's what opens them up. Because I know you're not doing this because you like doing this. You're doing this because you think this is the only thing you can do to show power. Where did you learn that? That's how fearful you are. Where did you learn that level of fear? Who did this to you? And man, that's when the human being comes out. But you go in there and threaten that person, you're shutting them right into the world they've always been in. Fear, threat, control, power. So what we're all used to is like, if you either do what we say or we're going to run over you. And you'll never work in this industry, or you'll never deal with our country because you're going to only do it the way we say it. Or that's how we're all raised. That's why places eat our soul. We go there to be creative. Wow. I don't want your creativity. We want what can you produce for us? That's always the question of the empire. What can you produce for me that makes me money? And if you can't, we don't care what you think or who you are. We don't care about your being. We care about your doing. And then you go sit in a church. They're like, we're glad you're here. How many people can you win to Christ for us? How much money can you produce for us? It's the same productions. You can't get away from the production emphasis. Instead of just be here in your true identity and let the gift of your identity produce what it does. And that'll be the greatest thing. Whether it's a movie script or kindness or whatever it is. And then the community works together in it. It's beautiful.
So but good.
Such a hard time with it. Yeah. Because we're fearful.
It's funny. I felt like there was this time in my life when I just like the Lord, it just rescued me in such a clear way that I was like, oh, I want to create like a story about him. And as I was like writing this thing, finished writing, I was like, this isn't very good. And I was like, I just don't really like this. And I was like, I felt like I was praying about it. And I sort of felt like the Lord was like, this time, let's try again. Start from scratch. And this time, instead of trying to just write about me, how about you try to write with me?
Great.
And like, let's do this together. And like the act itself being an act of worship versus being like you said, how many people will come to Christ because of this, you know? And and it was a whole shift for me. I was like, this is, now I don't have to be alone when I do this. You know what I mean? Now it's in the ways I can like do it with him. And that's cool to hear. I wanted to ask you, what do you feel is like one of the bigger obstacles like creatives encounter when trying to be spirit led? In their work or their calling?
Fear. It's always fear. The number one exhortation in scripture is don't be afraid. It's the most repeated exhortation by God is do not be afraid. And that's the killer of people. Once people are fearful, they'll self-protect and self-promote and they'll shut down their true identity in order to self-protect or self-promote, whichever they have to think they have to do. So the question is more, if you weren't afraid, what would you do? If you weren't afraid, if you weren't afraid of money, if you weren't afraid of rejection, if you weren't afraid of bad people living in a hostile environment, what would you do? Because when you were young, you weren't afraid, but you learned to be afraid slowly, right? So like, you know, I have grandkids and my granddaughters are getting older, but when they're little, young, they would like FaceTime us and sing songs, and they were beautiful. They look in the mirror and they see beauty. They think they're great singers. They think they're great actresses. And it's amazing to watch them until they went to school and were told they weren't. And then it was gone. It wasn't gone for like an hour. It was gone. That's how fast the world just rips that out of us. And so then when we go to do something, it's like, well, and that's why I like what you're saying. It's like, well, that's not very good. That's always what you're going to say. The scarcity worldview is not enough. It's always not. It's never enough. That's how we're raised. Nothing is ever enough. There's not enough time. There's not enough money. You're not enough. There's not enough land. There's not enough food. That's the whole way we're taught our whole life. And if we don't go get it, we're not going to have it. This is Eve's in the garden. It's like, wow, he didn't give us everything. We thought he did. He didn't. We got to go get this other piece. And so that as soon as that fear kicks in, either you're going to address that fear. Where's it coming from? What do I do? What's the source of the fear, which is will be false identity, actually. Unless you address that, you're going to go to protect against the fear, right? So that's when you break down. Yeah. I'll change my idea. We'll change the program, not because there's other creative voices in there shaping it, which is fine, but it's because, because they're not going to take it unless I do this, or it's not going to work. You know, like when I would try, you know, like the things that got me the most sort of influence in the police department were all firing offenses when I did them. They were absolutely firing offenses, except they worked. That's the difference. But how would you ever know that? And all you're afraid of is getting fired. That the fear shuts down the creativity to try something different in whatever it is you're doing. We could fail. Yeah, definitely you can. Yes, that's a fact. When you live in a world of mystery, it's all about failure. But that's normal and part of the process, and it's not an identity. So let's try. And because if you're not going to try, obviously, and as old cliches, is you're not going to ever do anything. But it's fear. That's why the scriptures are constantly saying, don't be afraid. And I'm always asking our team and our people, even our CEO does it at the beginning of a meeting. She just said today, she's like, is anyone afraid right now? Is anyone dealing with fear in any part of your life? Because if you are, your identity is not going to be fully engaged in this process we're going to go into. And so in families, families operate in fear as whole families. They never address it. So the family can't even bring its own identities to each other because they're self-protecting and self-promoting. Or if I say this, you know, my partner might get mad. So that's it to me. Fear is the great. And perfect love is what takes away fear. It's the only thing.
And what would you, I guess, is it kind of similar to what you're saying where like, okay, you find that fear, where did this come from? And then kind of that inner healing of like inviting the Lord into that being, where were you? What do you want to say to this moment?
Yeah. Yeah. How do you speak to that fear? So, And just because if God is present, omnipresent, like we say, then he's present in every situation. You don't have to beg him to show up, which we're taught. We really need you to show up right now. It's like, where do you think he is? Like, is he over there somewhere? Where is he? He's omnipresent. He can't go anywhere else. He's all that is. He's right here. But if you live your life like he's down the street somewhere, you're already living in a lie. That's already a lie. And it's a crippling lie because he's not with me. He's not with me. And David says it beautifully in the Psalms, in his poetry. He's like, where can I go from your spirit? Into the heavens you are there, yet in the depths of Sheol, yet you are there. That's a powerful statement. So we think we can get into a state of sin where he can't go. He's right there. And the thing is, are we going to acknowledge that he's right there? Are we going to look at him and say, yeah, I'm so terrified right now. And here's what I believe about you. You're not here. That you're not here. I believe you're not here. That's real confession. He doesn't want you to apologize for stuff. He just wants you to say what you really believe. And I feel like, Lord, I feel like I'm all alone here and that you're not anywhere near me helping me. What's the truth? Because I can't make myself believe something. You have to persuade me. You have to convince me. And I don't think we think God can do it or will do it. So we don't. We've got to convince ourselves, which is really hard to do. It doesn't last very long.
Yeah.
When we're doing that.
I've heard, you know, hearing about your experience with the Lord in a movie theater, you know, when you're not supposed to be there and everything with that. And I've also heard, I think there's little moments on other of you talking about working on a film or writing a project right now. Are you involved in a film project or something?
Yeah.
About that?
We've got a couple. One animated that's same thing. It was so interesting. The writer of it lives here in our city. And we met through these very bizarre circumstances. She can talk about how the Lord did it. And we met. And then so she was showing me different things that she's written. And she's a good script writer. She's a good story writer, but never had anything really hit. And when I was reading her stuff after knowing her for a few months, I said, why don't you put your identity into this? Like, why isn't your identity? This isn't coming out of your identity. This is coming out of, you know how to write a good story. And I said, that's great. Mm. But what would really make this thing distinct is you. So why are you afraid? And then she said, well, I don't really know what that is. And so I said, well, let's put the story aside and let's work on that. So we worked together on identity. And then she came back, wrote it again. And it's in full production now. And the people that are working on it with her, the animators and all, she'll tell you, they weep when they read it. It's a simple story. And by itself, it was an okay, simple story, but not when she put her identity. It's more like writing with God. God's like, I made you to tell a story like no one else can tell it. It doesn't have to be like, so new. No, it's just the way you tell it. Tell it the way you tell. And she did it. And, you know, investors came in and put money in 2 weeks. That thing was fully invested. Shocking things that she's been trying to do for a long time. And it just does things open because she started to abide in what the Lord said about her and just what you're saying with And together, in the identity that he gave her with him, she wrote this beautiful script. And it's, and they're already asking her for another one, and they want a merchandising contract. Like, that's what I'm talking about. And so what we're doing is, she did it. She sat with me one day, and I just told her stories of police stuff we did and stuff overseas, and she wrote it into a script. And, you know, Muslims coming to faith. But what does that really look like in the real world? Not in some fabricated Christian scenario, but in the real, how does a Hamas, what happens to a Hamas person when they encounter Jesus in the real world? Not so that you can write a book about, you know, this guy used to be a bad guy, now he's a good guy. Not like that stuff. Like, no, he stayed in that world to win his brothers to faith. Like, no one will ever know who this person is, but he's done more unbelievable stuff because he's of how he did. And so she wrote the script in that in three seasons. And when we, and she flew right, because she knew what it was, and she flew right to out to Hollywood and pitched it. And they took it immediately, and then they called me about it and completely pushed her out. Which is typical, you know, we don't need her. You're the one that told the story. We don't need her. And I'm like, I can't believe you're going to do this to my face. You're just going to totally kick her out of it. And so I turned them down, and they told me, you'll never get a deal like what we're going to give you because nobody knows who you are. And I said, I don't care. It is, I don't believe it. That's empire and the kingdom thing. Anyway, so yeah, we just did an investor meeting on it yesterday, and it's great. And so that's the one we're working on. It's a 3-season episodic about stuff that we're talking about, but it's in a way, it's in a story that I know all the cops I worked with would love. They're not believers. They would love, because it's them that I'm talking about. It's what happened to them in their real lives. I mean, I worked the suicide of my lieutenant's wife on a midnight shift. I had to go tell him, like, he's not a believer. Like, what do you say to that? You know, how do you talk to him? Or, yeah, I mean, a lady whose both her kids were decapitated behind her in a car, and she's knocked out, so she doesn't know what happened, and she wakes up. Okay, now I'm going to tell her about that. In what way does God speak in that situation? It's hard and it's messy, but to watch how he does it is just incredible. But those aren't the stories, you know, when I'm watching Christian stuff, it's not the, those aren't the stories that you see. It's always, yeah, it's just different than that. And one of the guys we were just with, a Muslim guy that, He came to faith out in the desert in the Middle East in a vision, and he went and told his tribe, and they shot him. Wow. Threw him off a cliff. That, you should see that guy today. He's incredible. He was tortured for 5 days in the desert, being cut by knives. And when they had him hanging up on the fifth day, they were saying, you can't tell. Stop telling people you're a Christian. He said, I'm not a Christian. I don't even know what that word means. He's never read the word Christian anywhere. He only read the Gospels, and the word Christian is not in the Gospels. He didn't know what the police were saying. You can't be a Christian. He's like, I don't know what that is. I'm from this tribe. We are Muslim people. And they're cutting him and torturing him. And then they say to him, they can't figure out what he's talking about then. They say, why do you keep talking about Jesus? And he goes, oh, he's the one that's talking to me all the time. He's talking to me right now. How can I say I don't believe in him? He's right here whispering in my ear right now. He's hung up, dehydrated, cut. And he goes, he's talking in my ear right now. And the captors said, what's he saying to you? And he said, he's telling me that every time you cut me, more of him comes out of me. He's inside my pain. He keeps telling me he's inside my pain. And when you cut me, it comes out in a kind of joy. That's what he said. It's not like he's going to get me out of the torture. He's like, you're beyond the torture. Like, that's the story that moves people. It's like, he didn't come to take away suffering. He came to show you how to suffer in a whole nother way, so you're not afraid of it. And so they said, what are you saying back to him? And he said, I can hear him whispering, but I want to see his face. And I keep asking him to move around so I could see his face. And he keeps telling me, if you look in my eyes, I'm going to take you with me. And so he told the guys with the swords, cut my throat so I can go. Please, I want to go so bad. Let me go with him. I want to see him face to face. Cut my throat. He was so fearless about death. And he'd never read Colossians, you know, to live as Christ dies. He doesn't know any of that stuff. He lives it. He knows it because it's real. We don't know that stuff. We don't know that stuff. And so they released him to punish him. They wouldn't kill him to punish him because they knew how badly he wanted to go. And they're like, you should hear that guy talk in the Middle East to Muslims. But he's not an evangelist. He's not a Christian evangelist. He's in that tribe that shot him. He's still there with him. He loves him.
Wow.
So like to, for a Muslim to watch a Muslim young 18 to 25 year old fighter to watch that guy go through that is the greatest courage they've ever seen. And it's not, it has meaning to his martyrdom, has meaning, not like you're going to die for Hamas. What a waste. Like that's a waste, but to die like that. They've never seen a testimony like that. They just see Muslims convert to Christianity. Like, we're the bad guys. Now they became good guys. And they don't want anything to do with it. But you show them a real story of a real Muslim. And the last thing I'll say about that is when I was a cop, it was funny. Hill Street Blues had just come on, you know. Still Stephen Boschko, the Hill Street Blues cop show. And my squad couldn't wait to go home and watch that stuff. We couldn't wait. We did it all day long and all night long. Like, why do you want to go home and watch it? Because it just portrayed them in a way that they thought was real. And I was like, imagine if through the season they were watching one or two of them be spiritually transformed. They would do it. They would have done it. If they could watch their own slowly walking through, why do you deal with alcoholism? Why do you deal with, like, you know, you just made a $5 million cash discovery. Why not take it and go to Peru? Because you're never going to make that kind of money in this job. That's the stuff they dealt with all the time. It's like that. But watching a police officer go through that and encountering Jesus in these certain ways, it would give them a pattern to follow, you know? So that's what the power of entertainment could do. Most of it's just like, you got to be some special forces dude and go in and rescue people. It's like, this is not real life. It's not real. It's a great movie, but it's not real. It's like that, because then if it's like that kind of person, I'll never be that person, so I can't be in it. It's like, it's not that kind of person. It's people like you. The whole thing is people like you. So like when you say I went to Hollywood and, you know, and all that happened to you, like tell me that story, because that story right there is a story everyone can relate to. Wherever they went and they got chewed up and eaten up and you didn't quit, like you didn't give up, you didn't. Why not? Why'd you stay in it? Or why are you, do you still love God? Why? We had a girl when I was teaching in a Muslim university, and she had this dramatic experience with Christ, and she started telling everyone in the university, and she got kicked out forever. And I went back 8 years later, and she worked in a rice paddy. Like, she was an engineering genius, and she ended up working in a rice paddy, never worked in anything else in the rest of her life. And I went out there, and I sat with her, and I said, all you're going to do is pick and plant rice the rest of your life in this field. And she said, I know, isn't it beautiful? And I said, why? Do you love Jesus still? She said, yes. And I said, why? He ruined your life. He ruined you. And she said, no, this is, he set me free. But in our kind of world as believers, that's not the goal. So yay, we can work in a rice field the rest of our lives, just us and Jesus. Then we failed. You know what I mean? Because we're raised like, if you're with Jesus, you're gonna. And so people can't relate to a lot of the stuff that we show them, because it's like, show me a girl that has peace in that future, and I'll show you a God that really can meet with you. So that's why I like when you say that story about where you went there and all the things that you you know, you got into, whatever. To me, it's like this, like, oh man, now you're talking.
Yeah. I think even in that, it's like what I felt, even with Prodigal, the nonprofit we have, is like really. I feel like what I feel like called to, and we feel called to, is like kind of tell the darker stories, or where, you know, there's kind of like light in the midst of darkness, and that tend to tell as honest as possible. You know, I think that, like, I actually think there's an obligation as someone who believes in Christ to be honest in what you write, you know, versus to try to, you know, do a positive propaganda or something. But do you feel like in some of the, you know, quote, faith-based stuff that exists, do you feel like you have a diagnosis for why some of that stuff doesn't work?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I think it's because it's messy, right? And it's messy, and we want, like, no, here's where I was bad, here's where I became good. Like, we want these clear lines, and it's inauthentic, as you're saying. It's inauthentic, and, you know, it's interesting, like, when you think, that's, to me, it's just like, I'm watching, I'm like, Where is this real? Even when they tell true stories, even when they're doing that, it's like, I can already tell you how this thing's going to go. I can tell you before I go to the thing how it's going to go. It's a set. It's going to be a set progression, because if it doesn't end up here, no one's going to, you know, we're not going to capitalize on the Christian market, which I think is just hilarious. We figured out, wow, we can make movies that Christians will go to. Wow, let's do that. And so I think that's, for me, it just doesn't ring true. And that's why, you know, where when I was in Dubai, when we were in the Middle East, I was in Dubai and I went to the theater and I was watching a movie, The Kingdom of Heaven, about the Crusades. Really great movie. And every time they would show Salah ad-Din as the leader of the Muslim, everyone in that theater would stand up and cheer. All theater stands up and cheer because it's one of their heroes. Salah ad-Din's one of their heroes. And he's portrayed in that movie pretty accurately. He was a very good man. But we would never portray Muslims like that in our shows. We don't portray them like that. They're bad guys. And so that's 1.7 billion people that we have just, and they can't look at a prophet. So they can't go watch The Chosen because they can't look at a prophet. They can't see an image of a prophet. Like, nobody cares about that? In fact, they can't do that. We're still just going to do stuff that Christians will go to, completely disregarding the whole rest of the world. It's kind of a propaganda thing, but that's what I feel like. Show me how messy this thing is, where a prostitute becomes a woman in the line of Jesus. Like that's how messy the Bible is. It's messy and life is messy. And so just give me some hope by telling me the truth about what happens. People make it out. People don't make it out. Most story arcs in scripture end low. They don't end up here. They end down here. And finally in that, so when Jesus is in the Mount of Transfiguration and it's Elijah and Moses with him, it's Jesus, Elijah, and Moses. And they're talking about the Exodus or the end, the exit of Jesus. Why Moses and Elijah? And they say, it's a law and the prophets. Maybe, but be more human than that. Why are Moses and Elijah the ones talking to Jesus about how Jesus is going to go out to a crucifixion? Because Moses and Elijah both failed. They were both failures. They're not the Daniel, they're the guys that didn't, Moses didn't get there. Yeah. He didn't. Elijah was to turn the hearts back to God. He didn't. He was depressed. He stepped out of what God was asking him to do. And so, but they didn't lose. Like the point, like they're still in the game. The game's eternal. They're still in it. And though they may have perceived even to themselves that they failed, they didn't, because Jesus wins the whole thing. And so who better for Jesus in his humanity to be standing there going, look, everyone's going to think you failed this thing. Your own guys are going to think you failed this. You're not. It doesn't fail. It won't fail. Like, I love that about the Bible, but boy, you're going to go out looking like a failure to the whole world. Even today, when I'm with Orthodox Jews in Jerusalem, they always say to me, Jesus wasn't a failed, Jesus wasn't a false Messiah. He wasn't. He was a failed Messiah. He failed. He didn't bring the kingdom. He didn't bring the kingdom to Israel. He was killed by Romans. Like, what's the victory in that? I think that's what Moses and Elijah were talking about to him. It's like, it's going to look like you didn't get him into the land, but that's not that. Right? And I love that about the Bible, that the highest transfiguration of Christ in his truest form is with two guys that didn't go out well. I love
it. Yeah.
Right? So beautiful. So encouraging to me, like, to think like that. It's not over. You're not done. We're not done yet, no matter what happens. So let's do it again. Let's try it again. So I think in Christian films, like, we're trying to be wholesome and healthy and have a good family. But what if your family's falling apart? That dark place. And what do you do in the darkness of that place? And maybe it doesn't end as happy as you think, but we're in the infinite game. We're not in the finite game. We're in the infinite game.
That's it right there.
That's the way to tell that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Our whole team.
I say that again.
I said our whole team, when we got to Baghdad, our whole team got killed in one day. Our whole lead training team got killed in one day. All that was left was all of our rookies who had only been there 6 months. And now they're in charge of everything that we're going to do in Iraq. And we could sit around all day long going, how come our whole senior team got killed in one incident? Where's God? What's he doing? Read the Bible. There's not going to be an explanation there. It's like, God doesn't answer why questions. Here's what he'll tell you. What do you want me to know? And what do you want me to do? He'll always answer those. Why did it happen? We're not in that big plan, but we're in this one. And we look at the scripture and we can watch people totally fail and everything's a disaster. Don't stop. Keep asking the Lord. Don't let me believe anything false about you because of what happened. Don't let me believe anything false about myself because of what happened. And don't let me believe anything false about my neighbor because of what happened. Because either one of those will destroy us. Their death doesn't stop us. Our separation from you could totally stop. And that's what God cares about. Don't separate from me. Don't separate from yourself, and don't separate from each other. Stay together. Stay connected. Keep going. And this will be okay, right? And those young people that were there, that was 2003 and four. They were 23 when they were there. They're all still there. They're in their 40s. They're in their late 40s. They're all still there, and they're phenomenal. But man, did they want to leave when that happened. And the only way they stayed is because we spent 2 days talking about what do we do with fear. Once they got over the fear, they stayed, and they're really successful at what they do. So I would love that kind of story. Cool. I'd love to tell that story, how they went through that. That's beautiful stuff that no one's going
to
know.
Yeah. Even to your point about like Kingdom of Heaven and the idea, or, you know, maybe like in a Western movie it would be, oh, the, you know, the Muslims are the bad guys. And I just think, like Ephesians 6:12, you know, our fight is not against flesh and blood. And I think that in the past year, that's been the verse of like the Lord keeps pushing on me. It's like this, it's not with people, you know, even healing from your trauma. It's not about people. It's not, you know, it's like, this is a spiritual matter. And, even the film I was telling you about, the ended up writing, we just finished in post and submitted to festival, but it's called Flesh and Blood. Oh, thank you. And that's kind of the ideas are this little girl who lost the ability to speak, and she's in this backwoods church in Oklahoma who doesn't want her to have to see a therapist, and there's this determined therapist who wants to treat her. And but really it's kind of like, who's the villain here? Where who caused this? And kind of, you know, is it this pastor, or is it this dad, or maybe the therapist, or, you know, and really all of it points to like, it's not against flesh and blood, you know, there's a spiritual matter. And it's been cool. We just got into, you know, I don't think people would know that it has a faith influence in it unless they knew ahead of time, but we just got into Scream Fest, which is like a horror film festival. It's kind of a Sundance of horror, but I feel like that, yeah, I think just to your point of like going into the darker spaces and to not be afraid to do it honestly, and then also just knowing where your battle is, you know, it's not against flesh and blood, and not letting fear control that.
And people do know. People can tell. They do know. You don't have to lay everything out for a person to get. That's always our mistake. Like, let God do it, people. He'll do it. You don't have to explain everything. The humans will get humanity. They get it. They're not.
Yeah.
We need more of that kind of thing. I love that. I think that's fantastic. Good for you. If you start blaming people for, you know, when Jesus gets sent out into be tempted by the enemy, by Satan, one thing that he needs to know is that the Romans are not going to be his enemy, or the Sadducees and Pharisees, they're not his enemy. This is your enemy. Yeah. Because when someone's beating you and torturing you and falsely accusing you, the temptation is to believe that's my enemy.
For sure.
But they are. And that's why Jesus on the cross says, Father, forgive them. They don't actually know what they're doing. They don't know what they're doing. They think they know. They don't. And that's why we forgive, even for the worst person, even for the traffickers and all that. The movie that came out about trafficking that was a successful Christian-based movie, when they interview people coming out of the movie, watching the movie, they're like, what's the emotion you feel coming out of the movie? Hatred for traffickers. Okay, you've already lost. You've already lost the whole thing, because all you did was make them hate them more. Like, the kingdom's already out. Or powerless. You know, powerless.
Yeah.
What can we do? I mean, these forces are too big, and I'm not special forces, and what can I do? You don't want either of those. Yeah. You want people coming out going, I need to forgive and love, and I need to think about how can I be a part of healing at whatever level I am in anywhere in my life. That's you transform a people group, right? Not making them mad at you. So
yeah,
I like
that's
that.
Good. Maybe for a final question too, I want to ask you is there anything you feel like God is currently calling you towards? I'm sure there's plenty, but anything specifically that's been kind of on your heart, or, you know?
I think what you're doing, I'm excited about your movie. I think because the enemy is not people. Yeah. And our culture is so bent on naming people that are enemies. And so, you know, because the human heart can only make a decision out of either love or fear. Those are the only two motivating emotions in decision-making, is love or fear. And fear just cripples us, you know, makes everybody an enemy. And so, and love is, you know, the one thing that can take away fear. So I feel like whatever I'm doing, whatever we're doing, we have to be going after the fear blame game and just promoting. It sounds so cliche, unfortunately, but this, the power of what love is, how the power of love to redeem and heal. One of my friends always says, Jesus doesn't fix problems, he heals people. He doesn't fix problems, he heals people. And our job is to hold people while Jesus heals them. I think you can do that in story. You don't have to tell, you don't have to explain every detail to them. Just hold them and let them grieve.
Yeah.
Let them be afraid, but then give them a ray of hope. And part of the ray of hope is like, those people don't own your future. They don't own your future. You think they do. That's why they don't. God does. What can we do for these wounded people that are reading in such fear and anger and hostility? Like, what can we do? Can we write stories? Can we, which I think story and art is really the first thing you could ever do to get inside of people is stories. And then talk about polemics and apologetics and all that stuff, but not until their fists are down. And story has the potential to get their fists up or down.
So, yeah. So you're to kind of bypass the mind and go to the heart or to the soul. Yeah.
That's right. That's what I learned at 14. The Lord's like, I'm not here to argue with you. I'm here to break your heart right now for the things that give you joy. Not to break your heart with sadness and desperation, but like, look at the beauty of this thing. Okay, tell me why you're not going to be a part of this. Just come with me at this journey. And, you know, I just said, okay, I want to be a police officer. And I mean, I had no idea what God had in mind. But he just gives us a picture to follow because we can't understand the whole thing. So you have a metaphor and you start to follow and you realize, like Dorothy stepping out of the black and white house into the world of color and off we go, where there's real friendship. And we understand what a real enemy is and all of that real stuff and the real beauty and color of that. But you're not going to do it in your little black and white world where everyone's come out into the color. And it's scary, it's frightening, but come is better than that black and white world because it's true and it's real. Let's go. But you need friends on the way for sure. So that's community.
That's good.
Yeah, I'm sure you have a lot of community when you're doing your project.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a great place to leave it. Can I just say a quick prayer for you real quick?
Yeah, love it. Yeah.
Lord, I thank you that you are at work in all things and that you're always speaking, Lord. I thank you for the way you've used Jamie to help so many other people, Father. And I thank you for the way that he trusts you, Lord, and tunes his ear to you for him and his family. I pray that you would bless his marriage, his relationships, his children, his grandchildren, God. And I pray that you would just continue to fuel him for your purposes, Lord, that his best years are just yet to come, Father, Lord, that you have so much you're doing within him. And I also pray that he could just delight, Lord, in just being your son and delighting in you, Lord, and being with you, Lord. And I just thank you for that, Lord. Bless him, Lord. In Jesus' name, amen.
Thank you.
Awesome.
Praying for you so much, man. Your movie. That's so exciting.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, it's been a really exciting process to see how it's gone. So I was going to say, too, me and my wife, we always have this rule. This is the benefits of being married to a strong woman. But we always have this rule of, like, if we ever have a hint that maybe, just maybe 1% God is leading us to do something, we just have to do it, you know, no matter what that is. And so this is, you know, truly no pressure, no need to even respond to this now. You can just take it with you. But at some point I sort of felt like I've helped other people on film things and with their stories from a directing or a writing standpoint. It sounds like you have something in place, but I felt like I was supposed to at least say it out loud that if you need help on anything from a story perspective or directing or filmmaking perspective, I'll just put that out there and you can, chew on that. If the time comes, that comes back to you, you know.
I've got your info and yeah, absolutely. Listen, I never turn down like intersections that God sets up ever. I would never say I'm 100% open to it. Like all the relationships I have that are significant, I didn't plan. So
same.
Like they happen. Yeah. They're Kairos moments. And so, yeah, it's an honor for you to even offer that. So absolutely. Yeah. We're in the investment process. So there's lots I don't know for sure. And yeah. So thank you. Oh, I'm absolutely. Yeah. I would feel super free to call on you.
Awesome.
So thank you for the offer. It's an honor.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for it's truly like I've sent like podcasts of you to multiple people, and you know, people are like, I got to listen to this like once a month. This is so good. So, thank you for using your voice and not giving into fear and just speaking out. So,
oh boy, I deal with fear every day, all the time.
Yeah, but you deal with it,
right? Exactly. Yeah, so. Don't let it stop you, but man, you still have it. So, yeah. Blessings on you and your wife and your production. I mean, I just pray that. It impacts people the way that you guys hoped it would and hope it will. That's the best we can.
Thank you.
Yeah, that'll be amazing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, officially if we can promote it or help with it, let me, that, you know, back at you for sure.
All right. Well, thanks, Jamie. This was great. Yeah. Appreciate it. No, talk soon.
See you. Take care.